IVM.
Welcome to All Things Policy, a daily podcast supported by Pragati, a flagship media initiative of the Takshashila Institution. We're a bunch of policy nerds based in Bengaluru, and we like to bring a fresh perspective to Indian affairs and an Indian perspective to global affairs. So grab a cup of coffee, sit back, and join us for today's chat.
Hello and welcome to another episode of All Things Policy. My name is Arjun and I work as a research analyst at the Takshashila Institution. Before we get into the episode today, I would just like to give a shout out to our education programs. As you know, the Takshashila Institution is a nonpartisan think tank and a school of public policy. We have programs lasting one semester and 1 year long that are tailored specifically for people like you, and they're all online and you can take them from anywhere. So the admissions are now open for our 12-week graduate certificate program in public policy, defense and foreign affairs, and tech and policy. Application deadline for this cohort is 27th August. Please visit school.takshashila.org.in to find out more. Now that we're done with that, let's get into the episode. Today we have a special guest who's joining us. His name is Sanjay Jain. And we're going to talk about something interesting what the government has come out with, or actually it's more or less an initiative. Sanjay is actually a partner at the Bharat Innovation Fund, which invests in early stage companies that use intellectual property as a business differentiator. And he's also a fellow at iSpirit, the software product industry think tank. He's one of the key contributors to help create and evangelize various government APIs, which are collectively referred to as the India Stack. And one of the products of the India Stack now is the ONDC, which is the Open Network for Digital E-Commerce. So we're going to talk about ONDC today, and Sanjay, who's here with us, has extensively worked on it. Welcome, Sanjay, to All Things Policy.
Thank you. Thank you for having me.
Yeah, and we also have Bharat with us, who is also the program manager for our Tech and Policy program. So he's also going to be joining us. Hey, Bharat.
Hey, Arjun. Hi, Sanjay.
Hey, Arjun. Yeah. Hey, Bharat.
Yeah, so just to start off with, Sanjay, can you just give us and our listeners a brief overview of what exactly ONDC is? And I mean, we have heard about it. We have seen that there's a lot of movement happening on the front. So if you could just give us a brief explanation of what exactly it is.
So ONDC is the Open Network for Digital Commerce. The basic idea is that we already have a lot of commerce happening in the country with various, you know, people selling goods and services and people buying them. But there's this move towards digital where you're already seeing that people want to access services, get them delivered to their home. And what has happened is that the structure of that market is very centralized, with power concentrated in the hands of a few people. Many of our local shopkeepers are left out of this market. And so as a result of that, that's a balance of power which needs to shift. And so what you want to do is enable every business in India to be able to transact digitally, which means we have to have a mechanism for building, getting buyers and sellers to talk to each other. And we want to do it in a way which does not create a central entity that is then becomes very powerful. And so it's actually set up as a network of multiple network participants who interact through a protocol, as opposed to a single platform that controls all of them. So ONDC is that network.
Yeah, that's really interesting. So basically, ONDC is now acting as an aggregator of platform, rather than being a platform itself. So it's bringing platforms like Amazon, Flipkart, Snapdeal, Dunzo, all of them on the same network and connecting them to sellers and buyers. Is that a brief kind of, the high level understanding of it?
Actually, I wouldn't take the big platforms as the right example for this, right? Because they already have both buyers and sellers on the platform. The more interesting ones are really smaller platforms that are able to bring together, say, a group of sellers onto one. So, for example, there are people who actually aggregate restaurants, because restaurants themselves are not digitally savvy. So there are people who actually provide services to them, particularly things like point of sale and also order taking, etc. And thus digitally transforming the restaurant to be able to connect to the network. Similarly, for small shops, there are people who aggregate sellers, again, typically through POS or CRM type of integrations, which then allow them to participate digitally.
Okay.
So these are the networks you're looking at. And how do you integrate a network of such shops or many such networks with similar networks of buyers? And that's the problem.
Okay. Okay. Bharat, you had something?
Yeah. So Sanjay, what you're saying seems to me like this ONDC disaggregates the buyer and seller side of the platforms, right? So that they can independently develop without needing a platform which is strong on both sides of this ecosystem. So what was the inspiration behind coming up with something like this? Are there any examples in other countries or in other markets from which this idea came about?
So I don't know of any other country which has done this. In some sense, ONDC actually relies on a protocol called Beacon. And Beacon was developed and built in India. There's actually Beacon Foundation, which created the protocol and has made it available through an open source license. And one of the first applications of Beacon in India was actually in Kochi, where you have mobility players. So people like taxis and rickshaws who are now connected to hailing in the same mechanism. So you don't need a centralized taxi aggregator doing it. You can do it in the same decentralized manner. And so that was actually been operational in Kochi now for some time. And now we are going beyond mobility, and ONDC is a very ambitious project, taking it pan-India and pan-services.
Okay. So when you say it allows multiple sellers and buyers to be on the platform, how does it work? Does each seller directly, you know, connect with the ONDC platform? Can you give us some kind of a visualization of how this might look like for an end user and for a seller? How do they get onto the platform?
Sure. So let's take the buyer scenario first, right? So your office is on Church Street. So let's say the Church Street local, all the shops on Church Street, whether it's a restaurant or a shop, get together and form a Church Street Association, which runs technology, which connects all of the sellers. Every seller shop, today, many of them are already digitally enabled through a point of sale, and they may also have somewhere to track what is in their shops, all the inventory and the products that they have. And now that becomes available as a catalog. And the seller platform now digitally connects all of these sellers, gets the catalogs together, and provides that to the network. On the other side, if you think of, I'm in part of a group, and let's say somebody has acquired a group of us individuals who might want to buy from Church Street and other places together. And this could be an app. It could be on the web, it could be a chatbot, it could be a voice interface, it could be anything. And now, just take, for example, let's say I want to buy a dosa, right? And so I can tell my app, I'm looking for a dosa. Now, this app is on the Beacon platform, and it then, on the ONDC platform, and which then connects with every seller in the neighborhood. So there's a geographic component to it. Tell me who all have dosas available. And then that search result comes back to my front end, which tells me dosas are from here. And let's say I select one of the dosas from the Church Street Retailer Association supported businesses. And then that physical transaction can happen. And then I can make the payment and that dosa will be delivered to me. So this is one example, if you will, of how it will work. So at each end, the buyer or the seller will connect to an enabling technology platform, if you will. And those platforms will interact with each other over this network through the protocol that is there.
So for a buyer platform or a seller platform, how do they deal with the logistics of the delivery? Or even, for example, the payments related to any good or service being offered, right? do the platforms have to manage this, or does ONDC provide some kind of interface for that to happen?
So it's part of the protocol. So for example, some sellers might say, look, we will deliver the product within a 5-kilometer radius, and that's it. And in some cases, the platform, either the buyer platform or the seller platform, will have a tie-up with the logistics provider. So even if, let's say, the seller is unable to do the delivery themselves, they will arrange through their logistics tie-ups the delivery to happen. So from the time the user hits search to the time they complete that agreement to do the transaction, all of these logistics arrangements will be negotiated between the two platforms to say, okay, Sanjay wanted to buy a dosa and he selected this particular dosa. How are we going to get to him? Do you have an agreement with the logistics provider or not? And if the shop does or the seller platform does, then they will actually use that arrangement. And so by the time I get to see it, I'll be told the dosa cost is X. This is the cost of delivery and so on. And then when I hit pay, I actually make the payment. And again, there are options. Some of them could be cash on delivery or some of them could be digital payments. In which case, let's take the digital payments example. So I make the payment digitally. And then that money is split between the various platforms based on whatever their charges are and the eventual source of goods and the logistics provider. All of that is coordinated through the protocol. What ONDC does is make sure the network exists, make sure that every player who's on the network is playing by the rules and is following the protocol. So they do a technical qualification and they manage the business, how it will run. They actually don't sit in between the transaction. They're a network manager.
Okay. So coming to some of the concerns that people have raised with respect to a platform like this. So when you talk about e-commerce platforms, vertical integration is seen as a problem. For example, when a marketplace operator is also a retailer on the same marketplace, then they gain an undue advantage in terms of how they can place their product more prominently and price it more competitively and things like that. So can ONDC kind of help address such competition-related issues?
In a way, it does, right? Because what it has done is it has separated these roles and has allowed for different players to come in. And that way, it would actually address this by structurally changing the way it works. So there's no single person who can now vertically integrate into this.
Okay. One of the other things that, you know, when ONDC actually came up was its comparison with another interface, which is the UPI, the Unified Payments Interface, right? So one of the questions I had was, does ONDC like have the same thing for e-commerce as UPI had for digital payments? But the concern with UPI is also the fact that there is a concentration of power in with respect to the NPCI itself and also a few apps, right? So we see that PhonePe and Google Pay have majority of the UPI transactions and stuff like that. So does, you know, ONDC, I mean, how far are the comparisons justified between UPI and ONDC itself first? And is there a possibility that one of the platforms on ONDC can get an undue advantage as some like other UPI apps have? So, yeah.
Sure. So let me, you know, break this question up into parts and answer that, right? One is, architecturally, ONDC is set up very differently than UPI. In UPI, you actually had a central switch through which all transactions were flowing. And that switch was responsible for the transaction itself and also for settlement, where money is, you know, moving from one bank account to another. And as a result of that, you have the central entity, which now has to control the entire ecosystem while, you know, being in there. Now, to the extent that NPCI has become powerful is because UPI has taken off, right? And that is really due to the success of the product that has made that ecosystem become even more important in our, in a systemic sense, right? Because let's say UPI accounts for the vast majority of digital transaction payments that happen in the country. And so it's become important. And hence, of course, there's a concern as to, does that make it too powerful? Is there systemic risk that comes from that? And those are all very valid questions to ask. But if you, and so structurally, ONDC is not set up that way. ONDC actually does not see the transaction itself. All it does is it orchestrates between players. So it makes sure there are enough players who are coming into the ecosystem, and it makes sure that they're all speaking the same language and they are all able to communicate with each other. A good analog of this is your email system. I can send an email to you without both of us being on the mail system and without a central entity controlling anything, because all I have to do is make sure I sign up with an email service provider and my email service provider talks a particular protocol and is able to find your email service provider. And then when I send an email, it goes to my mail service provider who sends it to your mail service provider who sends it to you. And there's no central switch in between that controls this. So ONDC is structured that way. So the architecture of ONDC precludes a centralized entity from coming into being. So that would then answer one part of your question about, are we making NPCI-like entity here? And the answer is no, because the architecture is different. The second part about certain payment apps becoming very dominant because they're a large part of the payment ecosystem is, I actually disagree with one word that you used in that, was undue. And the fact that they are there is because people chose those applications, right? They had multiple choices. They had Bheem, they have Paytm, they have multiple banks have their own apps, and so on. And for various reasons, the customers have ended up, you know, choosing certain apps over the others. So I don't necessarily like to use the word undue there, but yes, you are right. There is concentration because there are very few apps which have taken up a very large percentage of transactions. Will that happen with ONDC? Difficult question to answer, but I suspect that apps that have already got a fairly large user base will probably start with getting a large market share. But as time evolves, you know, I do see room for others to come in. I am in particular excited by people who are saying, look, I don't need an app. Can I just make a chatbot who will then sit inside every app on the phone, or can, so you can WhatsApp or SMS things, and we can do this over that that channel. Or I could do it over voice. So I actually think that there may be some initial advantage to people who already have a large number of customers. But over time, I think that will be challenged through newer modes of interactions and through the way the ecosystem will evolve. I think there's room for new players to come in who will provide a much better commerce interface than the people who already have the apps today. And frankly, we did see that with UPI as well. Right, because the UPI apps all came in as new apps, and over time we saw that consolidation happen. These are not old apps.
Okay, makes sense. Before we continue, let's take a small break, and we'll be right back.
Sanjay, so following up on the comparison with UPI, so with UPI we had NPCI, which is the regulator, infrastructure provider, and all of that. And you also had Bheem, which is an app, I mean, UPI payment gateway, all being operated by the same entity. Now, does this lead to some conflict of interest? Is there anything, is there any reason or advantage in having something like this? And do we see something similar happening with ONDC also?
So, first, and I don't see the conflict of interest directly, right? I mean, there is one, which is that the Bheem app, in some sense, competes for users with other apps, and it is provided by the same entity. So that is one potential issue you could flag. But I don't see it as serious incentive, because Bheem actually, you know, did not do the incentivization, etc., that many other apps did to get users. So they deliberately didn't compete. But what they did do was set up an example of a user interface that works. They set up, so I would say, you know, if you want to use the word exemplar, that's probably the right word. It's also a place where new features come into UPI, they get tested there and are available for use. And the thing Bheem did was allowed NPCI to actually make sure the entire system works end to end, because they had visibility into every aspect of the payment transaction as it happened, every failure mode and so on. And that actually allowed, I think, the UPI payment system to actually become very, very robust and resilient. So there were serious advantages that came with Bheem. By the way, I just want to put in a small plug. I did a podcast with Nikhil Kumar, and he actually raised this very nice points about why Bheem was very important to the UPI ecosystem, even though it's such a small percentage of that. And it was something which then allowed the system, the error rates to drop, and that then made it very resilient to the scale-up that happened. So with ONDC, they've actually explicitly chosen not to do that, right? So what they've done is they've said that at this point, they're not going to be a network operator of a player of any kind. They're only going to be setting the rules. And they have received fairly good support from the community to build these pieces. So I don't think we will see that situation happen again. Was there a second part to your question?
That was it. Just if there's a possibility of this happening with ONDC was what I was... So your example, actually, I mean, it's a very interesting use case that Bheem was actually... and end-to-end testing, gave you a platform to test it end-to-end and fix all the issues, right? So that makes a lot of sense.
Okay. So Sanjay, I had a question with regard to the aspect of people who are, the benefits of people or the players who are getting onto ONDC, right? So again, from the UPI side, there was no need for people to set up their UPI system by paying anyone. So, and you said that there was a centralized system in UPI wherein everything was controlled through that, all the payments went through that, right? So, but in terms of ONDC itself as a network, are players who are getting onto the platform or the network have any kind of, you know, like financial burden in terms of paying some entity or regulatory body to be on the network itself? Or is it just the fact that it's open source in a way that anyone can get onto it and connect with sellers, buyers, and just be part of that network?
So in the case of UPI, you know, just to keep the comparison the same, NPCI still charges for being a switch and for transactions to flow through it, because they provide a service and they do charge for it. It is just that because there is a, in fact, right at the beginning, that was always the case. And in the initial days, they had decided the pricing was going to be free to the end user, but that merchants would pay. And then over time, because of the way the regulation changed, at some point, that also went away. And so now, but still the participants do continue to pay NPCI to keep the things running.
Okay.
Now, and it's a fairly small amount, because at this scale, it actually, you know, the economies of scale are such that the per transaction cost is actually quite minimal. Now, coming to ONDC, yes, clearly, you know, there will be charges. I'm not involved in ONDC to the extent of being able to tell you what those charges will be. So I'll skip that part of it. But yes, there will be charges. Every player in that ecosystem will have some costs that they will bear and some revenue that they will get.
Sanjay, so I had another question about... So it's the major selling point of ONDC is that it will help empower local businesses and small businesses basically compete with large e-commerce platforms. So how is this going to happen? And secondly, what kind of goods and services, what kind of businesses will be able to get on the platform? Is it just goods that, like what we see on, say, Amazon, or could it be any other kind of service? What kind of businesses could get on, and how does ONDC really give them an edge to compete with larger e-commerce platforms?
So let's first sort of talk about participation, right? What ONDC will do is it will allow these platforms to bring in sellers who were unable to participate with the large e-commerce platforms today. And it then allows them to actually come in and, you know, make sure that their goods and products are services are available to everyone who's concerned. So this will then basically just give them a fighting chance to compete with an ecosystem where they could not participate. And how will it give them an edge is a different question. I think over time, that will have to be seen out how the network dynamics work, because clearly the buyers are buying on e-commerce because they get convenience, they get service, they get many other things, and they also get it at a lower cost. And how will this system, where there's no single entity who's incentivized to cut the end consumer price, to discount it, that is something which we'll have to still see how it plays out. Because finally, you know, as a country, we have a free market, and we'll have to figure out a way to get users onto this platform and participate. So that's, and if they do, then I think they have a fair chance to compete against all of the other e-commerce players out there. So it levels the playing field. It does not necessarily give them an edge today.
Okay. And on the other part about what kind of goods and services can we expect on ONDC, is it just limited to certain categories of products, or could it be a very broad
We're starting out with certain categories. So I think the first category that we are looking at is food and those kinds of services. But broadly, almost anything you buy through commerce should be able to come through this. So whether it is, you know, like the example I gave was a restaurant, but then there are similar things about goods sold in stores and even services. So I could, for example, buy my TV from one place and get installation service from somebody else. So both goods and services are part of the platform. And it is pretty wide, but it will probably be, just for the sake of manageability, opened up both geographically and category-wise over a period of time.
Okay. So, Sanjay, last question, right? So, we understand that ONDC is here to stay. But what do you think are the foreseeable challenges that the network might actually face in the coming future? And especially, you know, I had this one doubt about what if big e-commerce platforms do not decide to get on board with ONDC. So they say, we are okay with the market share we have right now, and for us, this is more profitable than going on ONDC. Will that kind of tilt the balance of what we should expect from ONDC itself? And where can we, what can we see when that happens, when big e-commerce firms decide to stay away and not get into the platform?
So actually, I want to go back to UPI, right? When UPI launched, you know, there was already an existing digital payment market with certain players in there. And they had a market share which was growing. And, you know, everybody thought it was a very healthy market share, and it was growing at a healthy pace. And yet, a large majority of our country was not covered by digital payments, right? And, but, you know, if you had asked somebody back before the launch of UPI, do we have a problem? They would have said, no, it's, you know, wonderful. It's growing. There are more cards every year. There's more point of sale machines and so on. And yet when this came in, it showed us how underpenetrated the market was, what the room for growth was. We see the same thing with ONDC, that, you know, we believe that today's e-commerce covers really a very small fraction of users, a very small fraction of sellers, and overall a small fraction of the market. And so as a result of that, you know, what we see, this is a massive expansion and democratization of the market at the same time. So I think if I were to define what success means for ONDC, it would be that we are able to enable commerce digitally for a much, much larger fraction of commerce today than what was the situation before. And so it's not really about competing with the large players, as it is about bringing many more people, both on the buyer side and the seller side, into digital commerce. So I would think of that as the success metrics for us. Now, to challenges to do that. One is clearly the economics of bringing many of these smaller players, both buyers and sellers, into the network is a cost. They're not there for various reasons, and we have to overcome those barriers to bring them into the system. That is one set of challenges that is going to be there over the next, I would say a few years. India is a very large country geographically, and in terms of the amount of commerce we do, it's huge. And to bring many of those players on will take time. And I think that will, happen for some time. Second, I think commerce is a little more complex category than payments. The number of things that can go wrong or right, when I buy some product, it comes with certain terms like about, till when can I return it? What's the assurance I'm giving? Payment terms, etc. Right? So there are a whole bunch of different things in the buying contract, which is different than a payment transaction. And making sure that everybody in the ecosystem understands that, is able to deal with all of the edge cases that come with products being delivered, the issues with the product, issues with the network, and so on. And that is going to take some time to come to maturity. And I think these are the two challenges I foresee for ONDC over the next 2 years, right? Beyond 2 years, I think the challenges of scale will start to come up, because many of these challenges will be sorted out and we'll have smoothly functioning systems. And then how do we make sure that such a network can scale to support the volumes that we have or we hope to have? And that will start to become a challenge. I think those will be the bigger challenges. There will be many small challenges on the way. There will be, people who enter into the network and behave badly. How do you manage that? Mm-hmm. Governance. Those sorts of things will be there again, I think, in the next 2 years. But beyond that, we should be better off.
Okay. Bharat, you had anything?
No, I think,
okay.
This is kind of really gives a lot of perspective about how it's, what ONDC is about and, the different views of the different stakeholders involved in this operation, because you have multiple stakeholders will be affected, right? From the large platforms to the local businesses to end users to the government. So this talk helps us to understand all of this a lot better. Thanks so much, Sanjay.
No, thank you, Arjun. Thank you, Bharat. It was a pleasure talking to you. And, I'm quite excited by ONDC and how it's playing out. And it'll be great to see it come up.
Yeah, thank you so much, Sanjay. As you said, right, there are quite a bit of challenges that still need to be overcome. But I guess it's only when people start using it, and the fact that, as you said, there is a lot of potential and untapped potential, and the market is there to be captured. It just seems that once it gets on the ground and starts functioning, then we could see the potential benefits of it and actually build on it and address future challenges later. So hopefully ONDC can achieve what UPI did. So let's see, maybe we can have a conversation in another 2 years.
Wonderful. Thanks, guys.
Thank you so much.
Thank you, Sanjay.
If you liked our show, don't forget to check out other interesting podcasts on the IVM network. You can tune into them on the IVM Podcast app, ivmpodcast.com, or wherever you listen to your podcasts. You can also follow IVM on social media. The handle is at IVM Podcasts on Twitter, Facebook, and Instagram. And hey, if you'd like to dive into Takshashila's research on technology, strategy, and economic affairs, check us out at our Twitter handle at TakshashilaInst or our website takshashila.org.in.
Hey, hey, it's been another great week on the IVM Podcast Network. On All Things Policy, Ananya Desai and Rohan Pai discuss recurrent bans on fireworks during festive seasons in India and discuss possible solutions to tackle India's air pollution problem. On the Habit Coach podcast, Ashton Doctor welcomes Sahil Mehta, an esteemed mountaineer and author of the book Break Free. Sahil shares a transformative experience which became the catalyst for embracing discipline and fulfillment. The episode explores the profound impact of vulnerability on personal growth. Folks, if you like our shows, do spread the word. Tell your friends and don't forget to rate and review them wherever you're listening to them. Follow us on social media. We are IVM Podcasts on Twitter, Facebook, Instagram and LinkedIn. You'll also find all our shows on YouTube at youtube.com/IVM Podcasts. And finally, we would like to thank our sponsors this week. Omidyar Network India, Abbott, IDFC First Bank and Save Life Foundation. Thank you for making this possible.